Hey guys, this week on Next in Marketing, I spoke to Krishan Bhatia, President and Chief Business Officer at NBC Universal. Krishan and I talked about what the company's learned about what consumers and advertisers want from streaming a year after launching Peacock, why he's pushing agencies to break some of their legacy TV buying thinking, and why the Olympics this year will be the ultimate demonstration of the future of streaming. Let's get started.
Everything we know about the media, marketing, and advertising business is being completely upended thanks to technology and data. We're talking with some of the top industry leaders as they steer their companies through constant change. Welcome to Next in Marketing, presented by AppsFlyer.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Next in Marketing. My guest this week is Krishan Bhatia. He's the President and Chief Business Officer at NBC Universal. Hey, Krishan, how you doing?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Lots to talk about in your role, particularly we're about a year into Peacock, which is your company's major streaming bet, a pretty different one in the scheme of things in that it was primarily an ad-supported platform. Your timing was very interesting, right? You would have launched without a pandemic and the Olympics would have been happening last year, but you had the advantage of launching in the middle of a streaming boom and lots of people being home and all that. So I'd love to, if you can maybe take us through what you've learned through the first year in terms of viewing habits and maybe what people's expectations are with viewing ads on Peacock.
Happy to. And as I mentioned, Mike, Peacock is a massive company-wide priority for us. And we really started the process almost 3 years ago when we saw a chance through streaming to create a future model for premium video. And we were very deliberate about that, if you remember, because you were following us at the time as well, to sort of counter the narrative that SVOD was really what was driving consumption on streaming platforms because it had no ads. And I think we've been able to very successfully prove that narrative wrong in the marketplace by believing that there's usually a dual revenue stream opportunity on most media platforms. And certainly that's been the case in television and premium video for decades. And we believe that that will be the case in streaming as well. So we set out to create this new model and reset what we believed was a giant opportunity for us to bring marketers into the equation at the outset and create a future advertising model that did not look like what we all become accustomed to on linear television. We took into account all the experience that we already had in our existing business. If you remember, we launched an ad format called the Prime Pod in linear television actually back in 2018. And that was really to create a highly premium, less cluttered, less advertising time-based ad format for advertisers in prime time. We launched that across 50 primetime shows at the time in both our broadcast and our cable networks. And all the research that went into the creation of the Prime Pod and that came out of the launch of that just emboldened us in our belief that that should be the future model for streaming and Peacock in particular. We learned a lot about not just time, which typically is how people react to advertising within linear content, but also clutter. Clutter is just as important to consumers and to the marketing efficacy as you can sort of relate to. If you're seeing 12 ads in a row, the likelihood of you memorizing any individual one versus if you're seeing no more than two ads in a row, obviously it's going to have a giant impact.
Sure.
And so we launched the product with Prime Pods exclusively, no more than 5 minutes per hour on the platform, no more than two ads per pod. And we took the opportunity to also create an ad innovation roadmap that we've been executing on for the past year since launch in partnership with our marketers, where we said we now have a digital canvas because a streaming product is by definition a digital platform. And so we can do things that a broadcast model obviously does not enable us to do. We've launched 7 unique ad formats in partnership with the launch sponsors over the last year. We have a number on the slate for this year and going into next year. And that was really the recognition that we can use this canvas to create unique ways for marketers to engage with consumers in linear and premium video content that they historically were not accustomed to or able to in a broadcast advertising model. Everything from pause ads to solo ads to binge ads to the spotlight ad that we recently launched. And we did that in partnership with marketers. We created something we called a Peacock Streaming Council, where with the 10 launch sponsors that we initially went to market with, we engaged with them, you know, obviously on a weekly basis through ongoing relationships, but in a more formal way on a quarterly basis. We share our research, they share their research and feedback, and we kind of jointly create the future of premium video advertising. So it's been an unbelievable journey. As you said, we launched it during the pandemic. There were obviously some challenges associated with executing, you know, in a virtual way on a massive product launch, but our teams across the globe overcame that. And then at the same time, as you mentioned, there were tailwinds because people were at home and there was a giant uplift in video consumption and media activity overall. And Peacock got the benefit of that, obviously. And now we're heading into, you know, a very exciting summer, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, with the Olympics slated as a massive priority for the company, and also will be featured on Peacock.
I believe, and I was definitely one of those folks who had pretty much made up their mind that, okay, ad-supported television is just not going to work for this generation that grew up on Netflix. Their tolerance is ruined. And what it's interesting I think there was thinking that all these efforts to reduce ad load were going to be futile for these folks. And that's actually proven not to be true, which I think is interesting that you've seen that even on linear television and with your new product, that people will accept this trade-off, even younger people.
100%. I mean, all the feedback that we see from consumers directly, we're tapping into about 70,000 consumers who have opted in to participate in various forms of research. And, you know, we test all sorts of consumer sentiments and obviously marketer metrics as well. But in terms of ad load, ad experience, ad variety, we have close to 80% of consumers, you know, confirming to us that it is in fact a great experience. It's a desirable ad load. It's an optimal ad variety where we've invested a ton in the creative rotation as well, right? It's right. One thing to limit time and manage clutter, but with that, you also have to very actively manage frequency, which of course has become, you know, a challenge for both marketers and consumers in other environments.
That's industry-wide with streaming, right? That it's great to have fewer ads, but you don't want to have people seeing the same ad 12 times in a row. That's a problem.
Exactly. And so we were very deliberate and fortunate, quite frankly, to be able to partner with a wide variety of marketers across many different categories. If you think about the initial brand marketers associated with the launch, we had, you know, everyone from Verizon to Unilever to Apartments.com to Target in very different categories. Oftentimes with multi-brand offerings, like Unilever, for example. And so the creative rotation, we worked actively with each of these brand marketers to, for every brand and every campaign, basically have at a minimum three different creatives rotating throughout the flight, rounds that experience out. And that's just not something that is the status quo in linear television. And so, again, we're taking, I think, this responsibility in streaming to reset, you know, a new model very, very seriously. And we're very deliberate about how we engage with marketers. We're very deliberate about how we build out the technology stack behind it. We're very deliberate about how we get the consumer feedback loop going and the marketer feedback loop, you know, for continued innovation. And so far, as you said, we're, you know, about a year in terms of the national launch. All signs are that there is a bright future for ad-supported premium video.
Right. On that note, it's awfully early to draw conclusions, but I wonder if you could talk about what you've learned about what's going to be the right way to sell Peacock or streaming, ad-supported streaming video in general. Because I think, you know, there's been some stories that have come out. The traditional buyers and brands, they want to know what shows they're on and how big the audiences are individually, and they want to be able to compare it to the rest of their broadcast buy. But then I'm sure you've got brands who are digital first or coming that are accustomed to buying through DSPs, and they want to buy audiences, and they don't think about those things, and they're less concerned about that. So that's different currencies, different measurement. How can you draw conclusions yet on how it's going to work long term sales wise?
It's a great question, and I think it again to us is all opportunity. And you're exactly right, because of the nature of streaming being a digital distribution platform. You are able to enable advertising opportunity and reaching consumers in context for many different sorts of advertisers who may want to activate in many different ways. And we're good with that. We've been leaning in, you know, to that for years. We'll talk about that presumably a little bit more. We've been on that journey for at least 5-6 years in terms of laying the foundation for that. And now we have a fully addressable product where we can use data and targeting for those marketers who are looking to zero in on specific segments of audiences. We can create ad innovation through formats that you typically cannot distribute on linear television. We can measure in ways that go above and beyond the panel-based approach for linear television and truly give you census level as well as attribution and ROI-based measurement. You can deliver the ads in an automated fashion, call that programmatic, although that's obviously not the only aspect of programmatic buying, but there is a layer of automation to it that lends itself to that. And you can tap into new demand channels that sort of democratize the access to premium video beyond large cap marketers historically to everyone from direct-to-consumer brands, DR brands, local brands, small and medium-sized businesses. And we think that's a huge opportunity. Historically, you know, many marketers have been crowded out of linear television because the bar is set so high, right? You're reaching a national audience, right? And you're reaching it in a broadcast fashion. Now you can actually get into a streaming product at a much lower threshold. And while we started with sponsors at the outset, which were for the most part large cap marketers, we're now opening up as we go into Q4 of this year, you know, really to any and all marketers who are looking to participate in that journey.
So that's interesting, because I know that at least based on what you're reading, coming out of the upfronts this year, was seemed pretty strong for everybody. And it seemed like streaming played a pretty prominent role from what you read. Again, it's hard to, you know, it's a little hard to draw conclusions because last year's upfront was so late because of the pandemic. This year, it's probably maybe artificially huge, or it was a bounce back year. So I don't know, but you probably wanted to take advantage of that and sell as much, you know, let's sell as much Peacock as we can and package it up with other stuff. But you also probably want to save something for this theoretical time and later in the year when you've got 1,000 brands bidding on this space that had never been on television before, or something like that. How do you guys balance that?
Of course. And that's sort of the science behind an upfront marketplace, you know, that has existed for many decades, quite frankly. And I think there was, as you mentioned, especially last year, a narrative that had started to build over the years that accelerated last year because of what economic situation we found ourselves in, that sort of called the upfront dead, or, you know, an anachronism of sorts.
Right.
And I think this year will prove that, you know, completely wrong. And as you said, we wrote a historical upfront this year. It was the largest and most significant upfront in our company's history. And the reason really is that you have a pent up demand and a much broader set of marketers that are looking and buying for consumer attention and competing with each other for that consumer attention, especially on an economic rebound as we're seeing, you know, throughout the economy, and with $1 trillion of consumer savings sort of waiting on the sidelines to be spent on everything from toothpaste to cars, right? So everyone wants a piece of that. And at the same time, the environments that I think every marketer understands of a premium video engagement that is contextually relevant, that is lean forward, that television has historically offered, and now streaming will only accelerate, is, you know, a perfect moment in time, obviously, for a marketplace to occur. You have hundreds, if not thousands, of advertisers looking to make forward bets and get their bets in, quite frankly, so they're guaranteed a spot. Mm-hmm. And you have more services than you've had in the past, I think also buying for consumer attention. But the premium video ecosystem is still a relatively constrained one. And so that made for, you know, an incredible upfront marketplace. But as you said, upfront is a portion of what the television economy typically sells. And we always reserve inventory for what we call the scatter marketplace. And that's going to be no different for Peacock or any of our other services to allow marketers, you know, to get into those products and offerings throughout the year as well. Of course, there's a benefit to the upfront, and marketers understand that. So you know, that I think concluded for us very successfully last month. And now we're fully focused on engaging with all of those upfront advertisers and actually activating against their investment for the new broadcast year, but also readying ourselves for the scatter marketplace.
Right. All right. We've mentioned a couple of times measurement. Your company in general has been trying to push the envelope a little bit, in an industry that has relied on, for better or worse, Nielsen ratings primarily as the currency. You have come up with some of your own sort of blends of the best of digital and traditional metrics. Can you talk about that, like where you are on that path as television tries to kind of do both things, where it satisfies the traditional brand advertiser and the newer audience first opportunity? And tell us about the one platform, what that's all about.
Of course. So I think, you know, to start at the top, I think you have to frame it through the lens of how the consumer is voting with their time. And that's obviously supported by where content is being made available, which is on more and more platforms, in more and more formats, and in a more digitized way than ever before. So when we went into the marketplace last year and this year, we kind of put a stake in the ground and we said, you know, across the NBC Universal portfolio, we reach 230 million US adults every month, and they're watching everything from sports to news to entertainment to lifestyle to Hispanic content, from broadcast to cable networks to Peacock to our other digital platforms to partnership platforms that we distribute. And when you add all that together, roughly 30% of that time today is already on digitally enabled platforms, and 70% is on linear. And we believe that within the next, let's say, 18 months to 2 years, we'll be in a 50-50 state in terms of how
that's pretty dramatic,
right? In terms of how the consumer is consuming our content. And therefore, for a marketer, you can't choose between the two. You want to reach consumers at scale.
Right.
And whether you're watching The Tonight Show live on broadcast, whether you're watching it the next day on demand, whether you are watching clips on YouTube, if you feel that your brand will make the most impactful impression with a consumer in the context of The Tonight Show, you want to be everywhere and with all the audiences that are consuming that across all these platforms. So that's really the framing value proposition behind one platform. It's unifying all of these consumer endpoints with an emphasis on our digital future, but inclusive of our current broadcast and linear models. And it is saying, let's plan media in a different way. Let's plan it more holistically. Let's find those audiences across all of those platforms. Let's build media plans that support that. And then let's measure it in a holistic way. And as you know, we've been on a measurement investment journey for many years as well. We originally created a metric we call CFlight, which aggregates the consumption and the impressions generated on linear television platforms with those of digital. It equivalizes them and it becomes the basis and a currency for us to transact on and guarantee on with marketers. That's been up and running for multiple years. We're taking CFlight on a journey actually across the globe now. Sky
beyond NBCU, right?
Beyond NBC Universal. And we were partnering with our friends at Sky for the European marketplace. It's being launched in the UK. It's being launched in Germany. We've gotten inquiries from Latin America and Asia. And we try to be pragmatic and at the same time lead on the topic of measurement. Because when you look at cross-platform measurement, you sort of define it in its end state with everything you could possibly want to include, it's overwhelming. And as a result, no one ever like gets started because there's so many things to account for.
Yeah, just keep doing it the old way. I can't, there's too much change.
Yeah, so we said, let's take a practical step towards that because the basis for it right now is just to say an impression on one platform should be defined in the same way as the impression on another. And that's been, you know, a big challenge, I think, for marketers in general, where many of the digital platforms have defined exposure and impressions in very different ways than traditional media platforms, right? A 30-second impression on linear television is a very different impression from a first frame or first pixel rendering on a digital platform. And so we've equivalized the two. On digital, for us, it's a completed view, right? And a completed view, by definition, means you've actually watched the 15-second or 30-second commercial. Most of our impressions on digital platforms are back on a large screen as well. And so you can add them together and you can say, if you're building a media plan that runs across these different platforms, that aggregated sum total of impressions is the basis for how we conduct business. And that's only the starting point and was a very practical, we thought, and pragmatic step that now seems to be catching on, you know, across many different broadcasters and many different marketplaces. But that was the start. And we're going, you know, we have a roadmap basically that has kind of two dimensions on it. Cross-platform measurement is one, right? How do I aggregate impressions? How do I unduplicate reach frequency? But then almost as, if not more importantly, how do I measure impact back to, for every dollar spent with NBC Universal, what's my return on that investment in terms of driving sales or new customers, et cetera? And so we've had a team focused on, you know, building out basically an ROI model that we call total investment impact for years. We're working with the auto category in particular, because you need to work with categories where you have very strong and high fidelity sales data that you can tie back to exposure and eliminate for noise and other externalities. And we're proving out that, you know, depending on your level and mix of media on NBC Universal's platforms, you will drive different impact to sell cars. So we're partnering with many of the leading auto manufacturers on that, and we're now taking it into other categories, including financial services and again, categories that have a good understanding of their sales data that can be matched, obviously, in a way that ties back exposure all the way to impact. So that measurement journey, you know, from a very monolithic approach in linear television is going to be opened very widely. We believe that there's going to be a very broad set of measurement partners and providers that we will be partnering with to round out the picture of where the consumer is engaging, on what platforms, in what type of content, and obviously for which brands. And there will be specialization. There won't be ever a single provider or a single framework that accomplishes it all. We're also leaning into industry partnerships with OpenAP, for example, as we may talk about later, and in coordination with what the ANA is doing from the marketing side, we believe those industry partnerships to bring various constituents to the table and then take a very practical sort of approach to building out towards that future state is going to make a huge difference versus, you know, hundreds of bilateral relationships between programmers and marketers and measurement providers. So you do have to bring the industry along, and I think that's been a long time in the making, and there seem to be initiatives underway now that are starting to consolidate some of that investment and those efforts towards more unified solutions.
I was going to say, what you're describing, when you're pretty close to a world where you're 50-50 digital, and you're trying to push the medium forward with all these, with the measurement that reflects that, it almost screams for, hey, brands, agencies, you got to stop having these siloed budgets and treat these worlds like they're different pieces, which is not easy. It struck me that you and I were both at that event yesterday, the Trade Desk hosted. There was a gentleman from Wavemaker talking about how he thinks that TV advertisers get so hung up on trying to get perfect CPMs and blending traditional metrics when he's really focused on outcomes. But I wonder if you're trying to almost push the other side of the industry to come along with you, and I'm sure brands are in all different places to get past this silo thinking.
We absolutely are. It is a leadership opportunity and challenge at the same time that doesn't just affect one side of the equation, which in our case, we're a programmer, right, with a significantly scaled portfolio of products that reach hundreds of millions of consumers. You have to bring along the marketers, you have to bring along the agencies, and you have to bring along technology partners. You mentioned the Trade Desk just now, who we're, you know, very deeply partnered with in that journey. So a big part of my job and my team's job is actually to cultivate and invest in all of these industry partnerships. We have sales teams, obviously, that focus on clients. We have sales teams that are focused on agencies. We have partnerships teams that are focused on distribution platforms, programmatic partners, measurement platforms. And all of that, you know, takes a huge amount of investment and resources. And we happen to be a scaled enough portfolio where we've gotten license to invest in that for multiple years and have created a foundation not only of technology, but also of partnership that now allows us to bring the rest of the industry, so to speak, along and not wait for, you know, a magic gift basket to show up on our door one day that solves for all of these right. seemingly unsolvable issues. The marketers, I think, are actually the easiest part, because if you go to a CMO and you show them the data around where consumers they're trying to reach or consuming content, it's the easiest decision for them ever.
They're like, let's go, let's do it.
Of course, let's go. I want to be there. And then you, of course, have the legacy sort of, you know, infrastructure and business model that has been set up for good reason in the past, but now is increasingly out of date and broken. And that is incentive structures, ways of valuing impact, what technology, processes. I mean, there's a whole number of things that come with the challenge of transformation that imply that that legacy needs to be left behind. And the sooner you're able to leave it behind, the sooner you're actually going to be able to surf that future wave. So this upfront marketplace, because you mentioned it earlier, was a watershed moment, I think, in us bringing along both clients and agencies along that one platform vision. We launched it actually at the outset of last year, but then we ran into the pandemic a few months later.
Yep.
And last year's marketplace, for all the obvious reasons, you know, was a harder one for you to make that drastic.
It's a stick with what you know kind of year. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone was just trying to understand, like, you know, what's going to happen over the next 12 to 18 months. And
right.
Therefore conservative, obviously, in their investment strategy and not trying to break too many things at the same time. This year, very different. We're rebounding. Everyone wants the consumer attention that we talked about earlier. It requires a new model. We have a proposed model for how to do that. And so I think the adoption of one platform and the transformation from a legacy way of looking at media partnership to a future model, you know, has come not only a long way, like has been fully transformed, I think, as a result of the marketplace that we found ourselves in this year. And now we've sort of cleared most of that and we can move forward. As you know, we're building out really the future of a global advertising platform in partnership with all the NBC Universal brands in multiple markets, in partnership with our peers at Sky. And so that's really the next frontier for us.
Right. Speaking of bringing the industry along, there was a time not long ago where the thinking was TV is just never going to touch anything that feels programmatic, machine buying scary. And you guys over time have launched different products. I think there was NBC UX, then ETP, where you were kind of baby stepping, in my words, the industry towards like putting some video inventory into a digital product. And then you could buy some television through some software, but you weren't going full out throwing all your inventory into one exchange or something. But can you maybe walk us through where you are now in terms of like, can somebody buy NBCU inventory, what the way we think of as programmatically, or where that's coming and going?
Yeah, I think, you know, you said a number of things there that are accurate. Like, we've actually been on this journey for many years. In preparation for this, actually, I had to like look back at some of these product launches that you referenced. And they date back to like 2014 when we launched our first addressable offering, 2015 when we launched our data-driven linear offering, which was called ATP at the time and then turned into Audience Studio and ultimately aligned with our partners at Sky into AdSmart, which is the moniker we use right now for all of our advanced advertising offerings. But the point really was we were always lean in because we believed that data and automation actually only enhanced the value of media. And we were not scared of sort of the narrative that existed that, you know, in display advertising on the web in particular, programmatic and ad exchanges and ad networks sort of ruined the value of it.
Yep.
And it did to a certain extent, but not for the reasons of using data and automation, but for, you know, lack of control and sort of business rules around how to engage and how to think about those demand channels or activation channels in a holistic strategy. So programmatic is part of everything we do. You can base anywhere we can enable a programmatic channel to take shape, we are. There's a roadmap associated with that because increasingly requires many different third-party platforms. If you think about the intersection of like NBC Universal's content on a third-party platform, on a third-party device, all of which have technology that is interrelated, enabling things like programmatic requires a lot of different, you know, players to come together, for example. And so we are on a journey where all of our owned and operated products are programmatically enabled. We're working on the partnership aspect of that. We announced that Peacock, after the launch period, so starting in October, will be available on programmatic as well, starting with programmatic guaranteed, then going further and opening up what we call private marketplace as well. And again, all that comes from a philosophy that if you add data and if you reduce the level of friction through automation, that's a net positive rather than a net negative.
Right.
And we want to be agnostic, quite frankly, as to the marketers or advertisers' activation. If they want to continue to transact in, you know, a direct insertion order manner, as one typically does, that's great. If they want to enable, you know, a programmatic guaranteed buy through a DSP of their choice, for example, the Trade Desk, that's great. If they want to activate in a PMP model and want to bid competitively against other advertisers, that's great. So all of those, and if they want to run an addressable campaign, for example, using first-party data that we're investing in and capturing from our products and services in a privacy-compliant fashion, that's great. Like, there are smarter ways of buying media, and there are more mass market ways of buying media, and depending on the brand and the marketing objectives, those are all good ways of buying, and we want to be agnostic as to how those happen. We also want to recognize the fact that as we drive growth, we're going to be serving, as you said at the outset, more and more advertising constituents that range from, you know, large global brands to small and medium-sized businesses, and they're going to need different activation channels. And that's where most of that investment is going.
Krishan, let's wrap on this one. You're about to jump into the Olympics. You're about to hit a year after we expected. Big moment for you guys, big moment for streaming. What can you tell us about it? It's got to be one of the more complicated things in the world to change and disrupt in terms of advertising and presentation. Give us a couple highlights and what we might see in terms of the streaming output for consumers, and then how you've been selling it and creative things you're doing in the advertising front.
Well, hopefully everyone shares our excitement about, you know, bringing the country and the world together after 18 months of a global pandemic in this fashion, and 5 years after we had the last Summer Olympics in Rio in 2016. So we're super excited about it, you know, despite the continued challenges with getting people into the stadium. We think that the event itself, you know, will be a great unifier and is a huge investment priority for us as a company, has been for many years and will continue to be. I think what you will see is you will see more content on more platforms. It's a very similar narrative to how we were just talking about our overall portfolio strategy. We've announced that over 7,000 hours of Olympic content will be available. We will leverage literally every consumer activation point we have from our two broadcast networks, both NBC and Telemundo, as well as six cable networks, all of our digital platforms, Peacock. We're leaning in with partners more than ever before. We've talked about our partnership with Twitter and Twitch and Snapchat and many others that have participated in the Olympics and will continue to as well. We want this to be as ubiquitous an event for consumers and therefore as high reach and high impact for the marketers that are associated with it than ever before. And I think on the advertising journey side, you will see, again, a similar continuation of trend. We will have more marketers in these Olympic Games than we've ever had before. I think we've announced that 80 new advertisers vis-a-vis the 2016 Rio Olympics will be participating in this Summer Games, and we're still talking to multiple partners. There, you will see massive growth in categories that historically may have not shown up. Technology being an obvious one, social media, pharma, you know, and many others. I think you'll see unique kind of enterprise partnerships, like we announced with Salesforce, for example, where Salesforce will actually be partnering with us, starting with the Tokyo Olympics, going all the way to LA 28. They're a huge technology partner of ours, so they help power one platform for us, and they're now also going to partner with us on this Olympic journey over the next several years. So I think my point that I'd like to end on is this approach of investing in a foundation for future growth will manifest itself in all content and advertising related aspects, including an event like the Olympics that our company puts up. And that was really the premise of One Platform. It's not just about, you know, one piece of the equation. It's about everything where we can bring marketers and connect them with consumers. And the Olympics are just a, you know, amazing example of that. So we're super excited.
Sounds like you had a nice calm summer ahead of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck.
Exactly.
I am very much looking forward to that. I think that the world does need something to join together and feel good about. So I'm excited as well. But Sean, thank you so much for an awesome conversation. We could have talked for a couple more hours, but I really appreciate you making the time. Great talking to you.
And we will, Mike. Thank you for the opportunity.
A big thanks to my guest this week, Krishan Bhatia, President and Chief Business Officer at NBC Universal, and of course, my partners at AppsFlyer. If you like this episode, please take a moment to rate and leave a review. We have lots more to bring you, so be sure to hit that subscribe button. We'll see you next time for more on what's next in marketing. A big thanks to my guest this week, JP Evangelista, Senior Vice President of Content Programming and Marketing at Vivo, and of course, my partners at AppsFlyer. If you like this episode, please take a moment to rate and leave a review. We have lots more to bring you, so be sure to hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you next time for more on what's next in marketing.